Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the May NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in a queue to speak and provide comments. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, could you read the open public meeting notice, please?
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of the date, time, and location of this meeting has been provided to the Office of the Secretary of State, Star Ledger, and the Trenton Times.
Okay. Thank you. Manira, could you call the roll?
Yes. Chairman Terry O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chair Charles Farlow.
Here.
Phil Amazia.
Here.
Marcia Medina Ferrara?
Here.
Aisha Glover?
Present.
Marcia Marley?
Here.
Robert Shimkoe?
Here.
Fred Dumont?
Here.
Jewel Antoine Johnson? Not yet. Okay, representing the executive branch, Aaron Cruz?
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo?
Here.
Manuel Carlino for Acting Commissioner Justin Zimmerman.
Here.
Keith White for Commissioner Robert Angelo.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean LaTourette.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a
call. Great. Thank you, Manura. Good morning, and welcome to the NJEDA's May board meetings. I want to first acknowledge a special guest this morning. We are delighted to have Tammy Murphy, the First Lady of the State of New Jersey, in attendance today. The first item that the board will consider is the acquisition of the land on which the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center will sit, a project championed by the First Lady. So welcome on this very exciting day. May is Small Business Month, serving as a tribute to the small businesses across the state and the nation, recognizing their contributions to the economy, our communities, and downtown. Specifically in New Jersey, the NJEDA is positively impacting the small business community in ways that are helping our mom-and-pop enterprises grow and flourish in New Jersey. Last week was National Small Business Week and presented an opportunity to showcase support for the state's small businesses through programs created under the Economic Recovery Act of 2020, known as the ERA, which was signed into law by Governor Murphy in January 2021. Created under the ERA, with the intention of helping small businesses recover from the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, the Main Street Recovery Fund provides eligible New Jersey micro business owners. Sorry,
Gabriel, we're strike this on the
minute. I was thinking about the Rangers.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. One ball against one.
Eligible New Jersey micro business owners and partnering entities with crucial financial support. Since October 2021, over $144 million in grant loans and technical assistance have been issued to over 5,000 New Jersey small businesses through the NJEDA's Main Street program. Another program helping to improve access to capital for small businesses is the New Jersey Capital Access Fund, which launched in November 2023. Administered by designated fund manager Calvert Impact, the $100 million fund, supported by the state Small Business Credit Initiative and a private capital match, leverages community development financial institutions, or CDFIs, and minority deposit institutions, or MDIs, to offer technical assistance and an affordable and flexible working capital loan product to assist small businesses and nonprofits with payroll, rent, utilities, and other operational business expenses. To date, more than $3.6 million in working capital loans has been approved under the NJ Capital Access Fund. Aligned with the NJEDA's commitment to supporting diverse businesses and creating an equitable economy, 52% of the loans were approved for women and minority-owned small businesses and nonprofits, and 72% of the overall funding supported business owners identified as socially and economically disadvantaged individuals. Throughout the week, we highlighted some of the many unique businesses supported under the NJEDA small business programs on our social media platforms and in the press. Highlighted businesses ran the gamut from restaurants and apparel retailers to a brewery and a pottery studio. To wrap up the week, the NJEDA hosted a small business resource fair in partnership with the New Jersey Business Action Center, the New Jersey Department of Treasury, the New Jersey Small Business Development Centers, and the Small Business Administration. The event was held at Rowan College. Hundreds of business owners attended to receive information on resources available to them to support their success. Small businesses are one of the most essential components of the state's economy and are the heart of New Jersey's iconic downtowns. We are grateful for the opportunity to support them throughout the year. We have a lot of other exciting news, including the governor's announcement yesterday of the New Jersey FinTech Accelerator Center at the Stevens Institute of Technology, or NJFAST. Now I'm going to turn the meeting over to Tim, who will discuss NJFAST and other updates in the CEO report.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First Lady, honored to have you here. Thank you so much for being here. In light of our honored guest, I'll leave you with my written report and just highlight a few things. As the chairman mentioned, and I'm paraphrasing the governor from yesterday in Hoboken, you know, particularly as it relates to the innovation economy, we're really on a roll. NJFAST yesterday, which is a partnership between the EDA, of course, but most importantly, Stevens Institute, Plug and Play, which is a world-class, best-in-class accelerator partner and venture capital partner and Prudential. We think it's a game-changer for our fintech innovation ecosystem. A week prior to yesterday, we were in Newark cutting the ribbon on PAX, which is a game-changer for hard tech manufacturing and decarbonized manufacturing. We've been full gangbusters ahead on the Princeton AI initiative, including a really great conference today after our last board meeting and then a trip that the governor and first lady led to California, both to cover AI and tech, and then film in Southern California. We've launched the Atlantic Security Grant Program. The governor announced the continuation of the offshore wind program with the NJ4 solicitation. Breaking of Kenview's world headquarters in Summit. We launched a new application for the Innovation Fellows program. So, you know, every direction we look, we're on a roll and continue to push forward on the governor's agenda. A couple things we'll have further today in the agenda. The chairman already mentioned the maternal infant health item, and I'll come back to that in a moment. We also know we have two really exciting approvals around film for your consideration, the film studio partner designation for Netflix and the film lease partner designation for 1888 Studios in Bayonne. I think our momentum, and John's going to talk about this in a moment after the First Lady, John, our newly minted executive director of the Motion Picture and Television Commission, sometimes called the Film Commission. Our momentum in film and TV is great, and I think the main reason the First Lady is joining us today is to talk about maternal infant health, but I would tell you that there is a 0% chance we would be talking about Netflix or 1888 or lots of other projects that are personal and direct leadership and involvement in bringing those projects forward. So thank you, First Lady, for that as well. But the main thing you are here to talk about, however, is the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center, which is a project I know that at least the two of us have been talking about, or I've been talking about for 5 years, 4 months, and 19 days. The reason I remember that is because the day my daughter was born, late 2018, First Lady sent me a text checking me in. How are you? Has a baby? How's Ruthie? I think she has Ruthie baby. In order, which is the appropriate order, to check in. I think we're all doing great, whatever, and I'm sitting here, all great, thanks so much for checking in. But, you know, we'd love to figure out some way to have the EDA be helpful to what you're doing around maternal and infant health. And she said, when you're back and settled, we should talk, because I've got some big ideas that we might be able to get you guys to help with. So here we are, many years, and lots of work led by the First Lady and her chief of staff, Stephanie, and a whole cadre of folks at the EDA who will present this item in a few minutes. But couldn't be more honored to be making this kind of progress that we're celebrating, or hopefully celebrating once the board votes today. But this has been a tremendous amount of work led by the First Lady and her team, and one that I think is going to be a game changer for Trenton and for moms and babies all throughout the state. So I have the privilege of yielding the floor to the great First Lady of the state of New Jersey for her to share some perspective on what we're here to do today. Without further ado.
We're trying to do more with less.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Tim, for obviously that really kind and incredibly generous introduction. I am thrilled to join all of you, Bill, for today's board meeting, and Chairman O'Toole for allowing me, thank you for giving me the time to speak, as well as to each of you, the entire board, for taking the time to consider this vote. The selection and acquisition of our future building site marks a really important step in New Jersey's progress toward becoming the national gold standard for maternal and infant health care. And I want to thank all of our many partners who worked so very hard to bring us to today. First and foremost, I want to thank Dr. Barbara George Johnson and the Watson Institute for Urban Policy and Research at Kane University, who have, in partnership with us, been on the ground, embedded in the Trenton community for years, working to ensure that our maternal and infant health innovation center is rooted in what the community wants and needs. The site selection today is a reflection of the voices heard through that process, and I want to thank the Trenton community for their invaluable input. From the very beginning, we understood that for Nurture NJ to succeed in its mission, every event, policy, and endeavor must be informed and guided by the same individuals who would be directly affected, namely New Jersey's mothers and families, and specifically mothers and families of color. For far too long, Trenton has existed without adequate maternal health care access, and the social determinants of health needed to simply have the opportunity to be healthy. I am grateful to all of those who helped us to select the Battle Monument site so that as many mothers as possible will be able to easily access the innovative and first-in-class healthcare services, community-based organization programming, and more that will be provided. Thanks to all of you, our center will not just be another government building. No offense taken. It will be situated near three NJ Transit bus stops, next to our incredible partners, Greater Mount Zion AME Church and Salvation and Social Justice, as well as the Henry J. Austin Health Center, in proximity to a community garden, green spaces, and so much more. It is my great hope that this center will become the heart of Trenton, just as mothers are the heart of our families. And as we consider the scope of work that this center will undertake, I also want to recognize Capitol Health, Rutgers University, and Trenton Health Team, the center's anchor tenants, which will work collaboratively to provide these essential services. And I'm thrilled to share that the NJEDA will also work in collaboration with the Trenton Board of Education and Rutgers to establish career pathways and training opportunities for public school students here in Trenton, including through accredited degree programs, certification programs, non-degree programs, on-the-job training, student support services, and maternal and infant health research opportunities. From its conception, this center has been imagined as an integrated three-dimensional approach to addressing our incredibly complex maternal and infant health crisis. And at every step of the way, I am heartened to see this vision becoming reality. And here, of course, I have to recognize our incredible CEO and president, Lisa. Sorry, I'm not sure. Is Lisa here?
Lisa's on the phone.
She's not here. Hi, Lisa. I just want to give you a shout out. She stepped up recently, as you all know well, and we are thrilled to have her as CEO and president of the authority. I also want to thank the mayor of Trenton, Reed Gassiora, Trenton Housing Authority, and the Trenton Superintendent and Board of Education for their input and assistance in this process. I have to add an additional shout out to my longtime mentor and friend, Sheila Oliver. And I say that because she has truly guided me with an eye and a focus on Trenton every single step of the way. So this one's for you, Sheila. Everything that Nurture NJ has been able to achieve over the past 6+ years has been because of the dedicated partnerships that have grown out of our shared desire to serve New Jersey's mothers, and the acquisition of this site is no different. in the coming years as the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Authority and this center are built out and staffed. They will serve the mothers of Trenton, the surrounding communities, and ultimately our state and nation with the highest level of care, services, research, and more. Research, by the way, that Tim was pointing out, he had an idea when I shared this with him about Ruthie's experience, which is things that could have happened. So one day, Tim. The work done at this facility will also one day ensure that New Jersey is the safest and most equitable state in the nation to deliver a baby. And it is my further hope that it will also help to make the United States one of the safest countries in the world for a new mom. I think we all understand just how significant that milestone will be for all families. So on behalf of Nurture NJ and as a mother of four, I want to congratulate and sincerely thank all of those who are working on this project, and I look forward to celebrating again when we open the doors. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, First Lady. I couldn't be more honored to have you here and witness this and your leadership in bringing this forward. Not just essential, it's existential to all this work. So thank you for that. John Crowley now has a really hard job, which is to follow the First Lady, talking about the future of moms and babies all around the planet, talking about filming TV in New Jersey. But that is also important as we think about people's livelihoods and this opportunity to grow New Jersey's film and television industry. I'll let John introduce himself in a moment. He's going to do a quick update on what the Film Commission is up to and what John's up to and introduce who John is. So, John, great, it's yours.
Thank you very much. First board meeting, and no pressure, First Lady, everybody here. I'm fine. By the way, is everybody here, or you keep one of you in, like, a secret bunker? I'm just curious. So I'll just take 20 seconds just to introduce myself. Apologies to Tim, Kathleen, and First Lady. You've heard this spiel five times, six times, but came from California. I was a... If somebody didn't agree with that, that was like the no button. I went to film school in California. I started my career over 25 years ago. I'm sorry. Started my career 25 years ago. Started actually as an editor on a show called Cops and then the Academy Awards. Worked my way up as a writer, director, and then what they call a showrunner, which is basically an executive producer. Moved out here several years ago. And helped create and develop it and sold, bought rather, a show called The Practical Jokers. So I worked on the network side for several years as well, doing development mostly and executive producing shows. About 5 or 6 years ago, hung my own shingle, developed, created, sold a show that I'm very proud of that debuted last year called Breaking the Ice. It's all about an all-female, all-diverse competitive ice skating team. So that was just last year. And during that time, I also was asked to run for public office. So I'm in my third term as a councilman and also a police commissioner in Atlantic Highlands. So I think that's sort of, oh, and today's my last day as a instructor at Marist College, which is, so that cap is coming off, Tim. But it's been incredibly... incredibly useful in terms of the workforce training that I'll talk about a little bit later, insightful, I should say. So I think that's why I'm here, because I straddle both worlds for the Film Commission of being able to understand on the municipal side, you know, what the concerns are as an elected when a film production comes into town and be able to help them understand that and guide them through that process. And then also on the production side, absolutely understanding how production gets done and what their needs and wants are and trying to be able to anticipate those wants and needs and how we can find a good collaborative win-win situation for our towns as well as production and make New Jersey a place that people want to come and shoot the projects and spend their money and hire people. So that's me. What is the Film Commission? So Film Commission is, I will say to you, I've shot in about 25 different states. Most of them are, they say, hi, welcome, and then that's the last you see them. We're different here in New Jersey. We're what I call concierge level, sort of a film commission, that we're white glove. We're as hands-on as you want us to be or not. want help in understanding where each town is, what their ordinance is and film permitting, we can help you with that. You want us to take you around and help you find locations that meet your needs, we can do that. You want us to act as a liaison between a municipality and your production and keep things running smoothly, we can do that. We have the staff. And, you know, I just did the math yesterday. There are probably over 75 years of experience on that staff, which means there are a lot of relationships already in terms of our mayors and our council people and our county folk and being able to bring people to the table and find a good way to collaborate with for all this work. I will also, and other agencies too. So whether it's child labor or firearm safety or even reaching out to places like JCP&L when there's a need for that sort of thing, we can do all that for production. And that makes it really especially handy for our municipalities as well, knowing that we can run interference for them or just to help smooth things over. So next slide, please. What are some of the other resources that we have? Just had a meeting with the staff yesterday. We're really doing a lot of work on our website. We're making things more intuitive and more easily navigable. And we're also expanding our database for our locations. And I'll get into that in a little bit later with Film Ready. But we're expanding the database of locations. That's the first place location scouts come and look, especially if they're from another state. And we've got over 4,000 locations listed on there currently. We're also expanding what I call our New Jersey 411, which is a production services list. So anything you need for production, cameras, lights, makeup, hair, caterers, small businesses like hardware stores, dry cleaners, those are all listed. So wherever you go, and we're going to have a navigable map, so that a lot of people, you know, you don't understand, they're from another state, they don't really understand New Jersey. It's just a map, and you don't know how big that is in scale. So you're going to be able to click on it, be able to find
environmental
where those services are.
Yeah, hang on. If folks are on the phone, do you just remember to be on mute, please? A few not mute moments.
So wherever your production is, being able to find how close those services are, which is another thing I'm going to jump out of line. Fascinating when we were in California is that people, I think, are, you know, from another state, don't understand that New Jersey is relatively compact in size. So if you want to go from a beach to, you know, snow and mountains, you want to go from farmland to a big city or a small town, you pick up stakes to move your production, you're talking about an hour, hour and a half. I won't mention any cities, but there are places nearby where it can take 2 hours just to go across town. So New Jersey is very attractive to a business where time is money. So being able to show those things graphically on the website, I think, is going to be a super plus for us. Film Ready is a Film Ready was started about a year and a half ago. It's a half-day workshop. It's a 5 easy step to get your town fully film certified. That's more than just a PR initiative. That's something that when I was with the First Lady and with the Governor and Tim in Los Angeles, you mentioned Film Ready, and you say, these are towns that are certified that are saying to you, they're simulating, we're ready for you, we're happy to host production. That means a lot to them. It really does, to know that they're welcome in a particular place. So that's something that what we're doing is I've been working with the staff and we're going to get even more towns certified. I think we're at 22. Tim, I'm shooting for 75 to 80% of everybody that we've talked to by the end of the year. And get that online. And then when somebody's film certified, they go on the website, and any film production company can go and immediately see where they welcome, which is a great, great thing. It's a great welcome card for the state of New Jersey.
In the spirit of film, I'm going to play the Oscars music soon, so we gotta get to work.
Moving forward, next slide. I don't need to read all of these, so top-tier incentives, why New Jersey? Very attractive. The diversity incentive is very attractive to all the studios. The future build-out with our stages, we're going from 7 to almost 60. Crew availability, unparalleled compared to New York, L.A., or any other place. It's really unparalleled in the state. And also, this is very important, doing business in a place where you want to do business. So that is that's a tip of the hat, the First Lady, the Governor, and our legislature, that these studios know that they're welcome here. Next stat, Our next slide, please. 2023 stats, they speak for themselves. Almost $600 million in 2023, and that's despite a strike by the WGA and AFTRA. So that's pretty incredible. Over 2,700 shoot days last year, and the average spend was over $214,000 per day in 2023, and again, that's despite the strike. And as I mentioned earlier, 8 current full-size stages, 58 online, 31 current studios right now, so there's plenty of places for people to shoot, with 7 more planned studios, Netflix, Bayonne, Lionsgate, 1888, Carteret, and Egg Harbor. Already talked about coming attractions in terms of the website. I will just mention that in terms of outreach, doing a lot more drilling deeper. We meet with the production heads and the heads of studios and networks, which is great and very important, but I'm trying to create, that's one of my mandates, trying to drill deeper and create a buzz, if you will, on multiple layers. So going to agencies, going to the production companies, going to when you're at a studio or network talking with their tax and their governance people. So having the conversation percolating everywhere so that New Jersey is top of mind. And going out regularly out to the West Coast to see these people because you've got to water those plants. And then industry training. So in addition to Film Ready, I'll just say that we're talking obviously to colleges and universities about what we can do for workshops and boot camps, but also a lot of excitement, I think, when we were out west, getting buy-in from the studios, for the studios to lend us their people when they come into town, their department heads, makeup, hair, art department, props, writers, the production offices, and doing workshops and boot camps, which will result in instant jobs when a production rolls into town. And they're very excited about that. They love that idea. And that is it. Thank you. Nice to meet all you.
John.
Four and a half, 5 weeks now at this point, so.
Yes.
Can I just add something? To see it in action Friday night, they're filming a major motion picture in our Essex County Courthouse, and the director, Stephanie Lang, I got to speak to, was so appreciative of the governor, the First Lady, the Film Commission, and the EDA, and was very specific about the tax credits being, we'll film anywhere if we can get this race in attack, because I was like, welcome to Essex. But all the people working, you know, I mean, it had an impact on the sheriff's officers to the local. I talked to the craft guy, and he gets all his stuff locally. So to see it in action is impressive.
I'm glad you ran that out on the
Yeah, and just quickly, we went through this in February when the rules passed, but to quickly go through some of the expansion and the details of the program, given the agenda today. Last summer, the program was extended through 2039. The annual allocation was increased up to $430 million per year. There's, on the next slide, some significant changes to the program, but overall, the legacy program, to remind you guys, is to offset CBT or GIT, corporate business tax or gross income tax. They are transferable credits. We have an available diversity bonus ranging from 2 to 4%. All construction, this is a new change in the rules, all construction contracts entered into by productions would have to comply with PW and AA requirements, and that is before and after getting the incentives. Some of the key, next slide, please. Talked a little bit about this on the last slide, but the tax credit amounts for the legacy side is 35% as a base credit. It is reduced to 30% for any expenses incurred for goods or services within the 30-mile studio zone. To be eligible, there are 2 pathways for film, either spend $1 million in New Jersey on qualified spend or incur 60% of the total cost through New Jersey vendors. So smaller productions tend to come in through that 60% test. Next slide, please. One of the biggest changes in the program going back a couple of years ago was the addition of the studio partner allocation bucket. So it's $150 million per year for what we call studio partners, who are film studios who commit to at least 250,000 square feet for at least 10 years. As part of the changes last summer, the benefits for those studio partner projects, once they are filming in the state, they can get a bump up to 40% over the base of 35. Again, that is reduced to 35 for expenses in the studio zone. Another benefit they get is they can
capture excess above-the-line wages and salaries. So normally films are capped at $500,000 per person. If you're a studio partner project, you can get over and above that cap, like you see here, based on project size. So under $50 million in total spend, qualified spend, you get up to $18 million in excess wages, which is a significant bump up from the legacy side of the program. The other next slide, film lease production companies. So this was a change from the bill last summer. They removed the film lease partner and basically created two different designations, one for facilities and then one for the people that actually use that space. So film lease production company would be production companies who actually shoot at a designated facility, which we'll talk about later today. I'm getting our first one here. They are able to, as long as they meet certain shooting requirements, shooting in New Jersey 50% of the time, and then of those shoot days, shooting in the studio, the designated studio, they are able to get similar benefits to a studio partner with a little bit reduced on the above-the-line excess that they can capture. I believe that's next slide. Is that it? Yeah. But we'll talk a little bit more in a bit when we get to the film incentives, but just wanted to run through that as a refresher for everybody.
This is not a drill. There's an approval coming to it in a couple minutes. That is my rather, and the grant giving is rather extended CEO report. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, back to the agenda. We have to approve the minutes from the April meeting. There's one set of minutes for approval today. Before you are the minutes from the April 10th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. I kindly request that board members state their name for the record when making a motion or second. Can I hear a motion to approve the April 10th board minutes?
Second.
Thank you. Second?
So we'll on to second.
Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Refusals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. We'll now move to the public comment section of the meeting. I'll now open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I will ask Daniel Esser to share the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting. Danielle.
Thank you, Chairman. As stated in NJEDA's public comment policy, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period will be acknowledged to speak first in person and then by phone. Members of the public attending the meeting by phone who are interested in providing public comment can press 1 and then 0 to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Now we'll go over the public comment policy, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A person may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there is enough time available for all those who wish to speak, and related documents, printed comments, or materials may be attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comment at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. I will now acknowledge any members of the public in the room who wish to provide comment at this time.
We don't have anybody that I'm aware of who's registered for public comment in person.
Okay, thank you. Operator, can you ask if there's anyone on the line who wishes to have a public comment?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you would like to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. And our first question is from Evan Sanchez. Please state your affiliation and your question.
Chairman O'Toole, fellow board members, and Mr. Sullivan, good morning. My name is Evan Sanchez. My business partner, Zenas Shaw, and I are co-founders of Authentic City Partners. We co-founded the Better Our Community in Atlantic City in 2016 and have been hard at work building small businesses and community in what is now known as the Orange Loop and was formerly known as the Dead Zone. We're grateful to NJEDA for recognizing the need to provide financial support to Atlantic City to realize the incredible opportunity here. Zenas and I are fully committed to continue our work to build a better Atlantic City day by day, year over year. And thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Evan.
Next we go to Lisa Assayer. Please state your affiliation and your question.
Good morning. This is Lisa Assayer representing the New Jersey Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Authority. Good morning to Chairman O'Toole, board members, CEO Tim Sullivan, EDA team, and certainly First Lady. I regret that I'm not there with you in person, but I've been listening, and I just wanted to say how excited I am to hear about the selection of the site in Trenton. I would like to extend a big thank you to Tim Sullivan and certainly to the First Lady for her vision in making New Jersey the safest and most equitable place to have a baby. I lead the authority, so I have the honor of sort of stepping into this role and continuing in this work. But it really is exciting that Trenton will be the epicenter for where we do this work. NIA is expected to have local influence, statewide influence, national influence, and global influence. So we could not be more excited that we have a site and we will begin the development of this work. So again, just want to say a big thank you to all involved and to say how excited I am to have this site finally identified. So I look forward to us breaking ground, and thank you again.
Thank you, Lisa.
Next we go to Mark Collazo. Please state your affiliation and your question.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Mark Collazo. I'm a local developer in Atlantic City. First, I want to appreciate everything that the EDA has been doing to spur economic development in the city with all the new programs, and we have an application before the board today, and I just appreciate the board's consideration for the project, which is going to help the Orange Loop continue to grow. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
And we
operator,
have
any other comments?
We have no other questions. You may continue.
All right. Thank you, operator. All right. As we do at each meeting, we'll give a summary of the committee's activity between the last meeting and today. First is the policy committee report, which I will I chair and I will report on. The NJEDA policy committee met on April 26th and considered two items this month. The first item was the presentation of an MOU between the EDA, the Trenton Board of Education, and the New Jersey Schools Development Authority for the authority's purchase of a specific site for the construction of the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center. As we've heard today, this is an exciting endeavor, something which, on behalf of the board, I'm excited to see move forward and be brought to the board for action today. We will consider that shortly. Secondly, the board was presented with the creation of the second phase of the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation, or ART, program to support public space activation. We'll consider that today as well. So moving on with the agenda, our first item presented by Mary Maples and Pamela Taylor is the Memorandum of Understanding between the EDA, the Board of Education, and the New Jersey Schools Development Authority for the purchase of our site in Trenton.
All right. Good morning, everyone. So if it's not abundantly clear, we're all very excited to be here to talk about this action item, and in the week leading up to Mother's Day, it's very appropriate. Just adding to the thanks already, over the last 2 years, our colleagues internally at EDA have been working on identifying an appropriate site for the future Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center. So I just want to give a shout out to our colleagues in the real estate group, as well as our maternal and infant health colleagues. And, of course, our legal colleagues, both here internally at EDA and at the Attorney General's Office. So thank you, everyone, for working with us.
Hey, Mary. Yes? Just to make sure everybody remembers, on the screen is a summary of what we're talking about today.
Yes, absolutely. So this request is essentially in two buckets. The first is a request to approve a 3-year memorandum of understanding between the authority, the Trenton Board of Education, and the New Jersey Schools Development Authority that will achieve 4 action steps. One, the authority is committed to purchase, as is, the Battle Monument site. To be clear, not the site with the actual monument, parcels adjacent to the monument, but to purchase it for a purchase price of approximately $2.6 million, which will serve to satisfy a lien that the Schools Development Authority has on the parcel and enable the Board of Ed to transfer it to us directly. As part of that, the SCA will then commit to hold those funds for a future project in working with the Board of Ed as they identify future school needs, so those funds can go to the future acquisition and construction of a school in Trenton as that timing flows. We also partner together, all three entities, to meet regularly and help them review and identify the potential space in the city for that future school project. And lastly, and Pamela will get into this in a moment, but we also agreed to work with Rutgers University and the consortium that will be at the center to establish career pathways for Trenton Public School students as we stand up the higher education focus at the center. So that's within the MOU, and to fund it, we are seeking your approval to allocate up to $3 million of the $50 million that was appropriated in the state's fiscal 24 budget to the authority for Strategic Innovation Center and Maternal and Infant Health Center projects. So specifically, those funds came in through the Economic Recovery Fund and as part of the establishment of the eMERGE program. And so in reviewing what was already approved and done by the board in effectuating that program in 2021, we identified that we need to make an amendment to the targeted industries definition. Currently, it excludes the direct provision of clinical services, but now that we have a clearer vision for the strategy of the center and we know that our partner, Capital Health, will be delivering clinical services in the building, we seek your approval to amend that targeted industries definition so that clinical services, when delivered in conjunction with and as part of an innovation center, are a permitted use of the funds. So for today, we're seeking to allocate $3 million of the $50 that the authority got. But to be clear, we will be back before the board when we have a fully negotiated purchase and sale agreement, as well as a construction budget to then construct the center. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I would love also to turn it over to my colleague, Pamela Taylor, to just show you where we are in the city and how this plays into the broader neighborhood strategy.
Thank you, Mary, and I'm really excited to be here. So I'm going to get into the images that you see on the screen, but first I just want to kind of echo the excitement that we feel just to partner with the Trenton Board of Education in building those career lattice pathways. So we're able to build apprenticeship and internship programs as well as certification programs for those Trenton Public School students that can be funneled up into associate or bachelor's. So we'll work in partnership with our Institute of Higher Education, like was so eloquently mentioned by the First Lady this morning. And just to get into these images, so we work very closely with our real estate advisory firm and our real estate team here at EDA and our community engagement partner, the Water Institute, to survey moms and families on potential locations for the site and to assess the feasibility of those the input that we heard from our moms and families. So the two main things, and you can also refer back to this in our community engagement report that was released phase one, was safety and accessibility. So when we spoke to our moms, those were the two main things that they highlighted to us. And downtown Trenton, you'll see here, came back as one of the most preferred areas. And through the JLL analysis, we identified the southwest corner of Pennington and Warren Street, and also known as the Battle Monument site. Again, not the actual site, but just around there. So you'll see the Maternal Infant Health Innovation Center will be right there, kind of in the middle. And then we have Henry J. Austin and our partners at Mount Zion AME Church, who are anchors in providing community resources. You'll also find in the second image here the larger city or the City of Trenton plan. So the Housing Authority and the City of Trenton applied for a Choice Neighborhood Grant, which will award federal funds to support the rebuilding of distressed communities as well as putting resources into the community. And the Maternal and Infant Health Center will happen to be a part of that application and a resource to the community. So really great wins right now for Trenton. I'm really excited about this project, and I'll pause here to take any questions.
I know it's early, and I think we discussed this in committee, but any sense on the construction budget scope? Does it fit within the $50 million allocation that we have?
Right now, we're working through the numbers, but we think we'll have more than enough. When we initially projected the space, we were thinking about 60,000 square feet. Right now, we're kind of looking about 45,000 or so. So I think we'll have more than enough funds to kind of cover it, and definitely we'll come back with more information when we come to present our sales and purchase agreement.
The $50 million that we're using portion of to do this today is actually only a portion of the funding available. So 30 of that 50 is reasonably hard circles, but soft circles for the Maternal Infant Health Center. There was a previous allocation of $20 million in a prior budget, and then the governor and the first lady prioritized this project for some allocation of some federal funds that U.S. Treasury approved several months ago. Mm-hmm. I forget when. So the total is about 75 million. Minus that three, which we'll commit to using about site here and doing I think I agree with Pamela. We'll have enough to build what we need to.
Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Ryan Tia.
Could I hear a second?
Chairman, I'm sorry, Chairman, yes. I'm Rafael Ferrara. I'd like to abstain from this since I work for the City of Trenton.
Yes, she's refusing, right? Okay. Thank you. Any, we have a second, correct? All right. Any further discussions?
Popular motion for getting in
on this.
So hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or other abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Congratulations. Shift to community development. The first item is the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation Program Phase 2. Matt Boyle.
So this product is requesting utilization of $15 million of 2023 appropriated funding. The original ART program was approved at the October 2022 board meeting and capitalized with $10 million for projects in Newark and Atlantic City. In the original phase one, each city was allocated $5 million with a split of 70% or $3.5 million per city, focused on real estate projects, and 30% or $1.5 million per city focused on public space activation projects. Public space applicants were awarded at the December board meeting, and real estate applicants were awarded at the February board meeting. This revised product will focus on public space applicants and has been expanded statewide to 31 municipalities who are in the top 25% of the MRI and are designated in the Neighborhood Preservation Program, a transit village, or targeted municipality. The project location must be within 1.5 miles radius of a rail station. Projects in Newark and Atlantic City will not be eligible for phase two of the grant. Eligible applicants are nonprofit organizations with a 501c3, 501c6, or 501c19 status. Municipalities, government, and for-profit entities are not eligible to apply. The product will support the creation of public space activation initiatives, such as placemaking projects, public art installations, and art-based projects. These activities may include, but are not limited to, art exhibitions, performances, festivals, parades, concerts, and cultural programming. The program will be competitively scored with online applications accepted during a minimum 60-day calendar window. The minimum grant request for the program is $100,000. The maximum grant request is $500,000. All fees will be waived for applicants, and staff is requesting an additional $375,000 for the authority's administrative fees. Any questions regarding the program? Any questions in the room?
The only thing I'd add, just as a framing matter, the purpose of ART, A-R-T, many purposes are largely smart. The purposes of the ART program is, in a world of remote work, hybrid work, how do we get more people downtown? We've piloted Newark and Atlantic City, two places that are particularly impacted by that, but how do you get more feet on the street, activation, how do you use arts and culture, which is something the governor and the first lady and lots of us think is a really important tool for driving economic growth, how do you use arts and culture and activation and public space activation as a way to drive vitality back to our downtowns or increase vitality in our downtowns. We did. We were in Newark on Halsey Street.
So and Tim and I and Aisha hosted us on in Newark on Friday, and we took a walk around the city, and we heard about funds from this being used to sponsor street festivals and fairs in Newark. And so it's certainly getting use.
Thank you.
Any questions in the room? Questions on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
So moved, Aisha.
Thank you, Aisha. Elizabeth will take that as a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Next, Christina, two items on Atlantic City.
So this item is recommending two approvals under the Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Program. This program utilized federal COVID funding through a $19.65 million fiscal year 24 budget appropriation, and it is utilizing COVID funding. But really what it does is it supports on a local level Atlantic City projects that are capital projects specifically, up to 50% of those hard and soft costs associated to that. So the minimum award could be $1 million up to a max award of $10 million. If you can click the next slide, I can go into the approval. So we have Realty Management Services, Inc. here. So they, this entity is owned by Mark Lazo and Richard Domenico for a new construction of a boutique hotel called the Topaz. It's going to be located at 215 South Tennessee Avenue. It will be a three-story Monopoly-themed building, including a usable rooftop space, and it will offer visitors the opportunity to rent single rooms or economy a larger group as well to rent out the six-bedroom property. The project in total will be 3,300 square feet. The first floor will consist of 1,400 of commercial space as well, too. The project costs are slightly over $2 million with a grant award of $1 million. This project is going to address downtown vitality efforts, and it's located on a vacant lot, which is also a beach block in the Orange Loop neighborhood. It's in Orange Loop neighborhood just because it's association to all the orange cars in the Monopoly game. So it's St. James, Tennessee, and New York Avenue. So just a little background of that. And, you know, this is reactivating an empty space in the neighborhood. So it's also going to attract visitors, but larger groups as well that can stay close to the boardwalk, the casinos, and support the small businesses in that neighborhood as well, too. The awardee will have 6 months from their approval letter date to secure their financing and demonstrate they've closed their funding to enter into our grant agreement as well, too. I have some slides. So it just shows the space. This is since 2012. Sorry for the people behind me, but 2021 and present day as well, too. And then the next slide will demonstrate this is the potential project at the end of the results as well, too. So you can just see it's kind of filling in the gap that's there currently. The next approval will be for Authentic City Partners. So this project, it's Authentic City Partners LLC is owned by Evan Sanchez and Zena Shaw. This project will be 18,000 square feet. It's going to be a mixed-use building that will offer 17 residential units, which will consist of 15 efficiency or studios, one-bedroom unit, and one 2-bedroom unit as well, too. It's also going to consist of 5,971 square feet of first-floor restaurant space, which will also be owned by Zenith and Evan as well, too. They'll partner up with a partner, and they'll fit that out separate from this project as well, too. But this project will just support the overall cost, which is slightly over $7 million. Their grant award will be $3,498,067, and again, this project is addressing downtown vitality efforts and small business support efforts as well, too. Again, it's going to be, you know, utilizing the vacant space. It's long-term vacant as well, too, but also it really helps just kind of locals be attracted to the neighborhood and also offers another small business to the neighborhood as well, too. And I have pictures for that one, too, as well. So as you can see, in 2019, this is what it currently had looked like then, and then CRDA was focused on acquiring properties and demolishing, and then if you go to the next slide, that's what it looks like today if you drive by in the neighborhood, and then anticipated results will look like the next slide. So, have you taken any questions?
Questions?
Two
different
votes,
right? Yeah.
Great project, Christina, really.
Anyone on the phone, questions or comments?
Okay, we're going to do this. We have two separate votes that we'll take. The first one is on the Realty Management Services. That's the Orange neighborhood, right?
Mm-hmm. They're both in Orangeville.
So that was the first one we discussed.
Yes. Yeah.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion by Duma.
Second?
Robert Chimko.
Thank you, Robert. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. The second is the one we're looking at on the screen here in the room today. Any further questions, comments? Hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Love is a project. Motion, Fred Dumont.
Thank you, Fred. Second?
Thanks, Mike Johnson.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to move to the Incentives Committee. Ginny Bauer, who is the Incentives Committee Chairman, could not be here today, so I'm going to read her report. The NJEDA Incentives Committee met on April 24th and considered five items, which will be discussed today. Staff presented an amendment to the Aspire program for the net benefit test requirements for film studio projects. Under the Garden State Film and Digital Media Jobs Act and program rules. Staff presented a recommendation to designate Netflix as a studio partner. The staff also presented a recommendation to designate the studio development by Togus Urban Renewal as a film lease partner facility. Staff presented the first recommendation for approval under the Brownfield Redevelopment Incentive Program for a project located in Bergen County. And lastly, staff presented the recommendation regarding the hearing officer's recommendation as it pertains to an appeal by Thinkster Learning. And we'll discuss each of those items now. First on the agenda is George and Hamsi are going to present the net benefit test requirement for film studio projects.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. Staff is requesting a change to the net benefit test for Aspire projects to more accurately reflect benefits enjoyed by the state and to account for film projects that may receive additional incentives in the future. Currently, to calculate the net benefit test for a regular Aspire project, the economics and data analytics team uses three inputs: hard construction costs, industry employment, and local taxes or pilot payments paid to the host municipality. Hard construction costs and taxes are estimated by the applicant. Industry activity is calculated using an industry code and average employment density. The employment number is then entered into in-plan, and taxes to the state over time are estimated based on average salaries. Benefits from hard construction costs are calculated in a theoretical year zero, and the benefits from taxes and industry activity are projected over the 10-year eligibility period. The net present value is calculated during the eligibility period, and the maximum applied award based on benefits being either 160 or 125% of said award, depending on the type of project. Last year, the board approved a change for commercial transformative projects, which allows applicants to provide a justification for a higher employment density with an appropriate third-party justification, and then staff then confirms that with our own third-party consultants. The HELIX uses model to account for the more unique employment and the translational research component of their project. So that brings us to today, where similarly, film production employment is not easily modeled or averaged. It may vary greatly from applicant to applicant. This is partly due to the temporary nature of producing individual films and television series. So in order to allow for different film production, you know, expectations in the projects, we're proposing to allow an applicant to model film production spend and associated full-time equivalent employment. These numbers would then be corroborated or challenged by our third-party consultants to ensure that they are reasonable given the size of the facility and the business model of the applicant. We would then hold the applicant to certifying to at least 60% of this number, starting in year three, much as the current Aspire rules require a commercial applicant to have 60% occupancy in their projects. In addition, staff recognizes that the benefits of the state, that the benefits the state would realize from the industry activity and the film studio projects may also be incentivized from the various film incentive programs in the future. Since it is impossible to determine what productions may request an incentive during the 10-year Aspire eligibility period, staff is proposing a reduction of 40% to the net positive economic benefits in each year of the eligibility period prior to taking the net present value and calculating an award. That number reflects the roughly 40% subsidy that film productions may receive in various programs. Or applicant may certify that none of the productions at their facility will apply for additional authority incentives during the Aspire eligibility period, and we wouldn't take a deduction. And then lastly, another small change. Staff recognizes that the construction period of some projects can be long, and that they may be paying taxes or pilot payments during that period. We're not currently capturing those benefits in our model, and so we are asking to add those taxes or pilot payments during the theoretical year zero as we do with hard construction costs. Thank you. Any questions?
Again, a bit of training. George, great job. Thank you. This is tricky because we have two programs at once. So we just want to be thoughtful about how we're sort of shuffling the decks of cards together and not over-incentivizing or overdoing it because we have the tax credit program. John talked about that, Matt talked about all the benefits that flow there. The Aspire program, of course, looks at the economics of the given project and whether they are a gap, whether it justifies itself, or whether it needs support to do so. There's no sort of modeling exercise. There's no perfect, 17 decimals precise way to sort of do this. This is a rough order of magnitude kind of proposed haircut. But basically, you could ignore this and say it doesn't really matter. We're subsidizing the films, and it doesn't really matter. I don't think that's prudent. And we want to see these projects happen. So I think this is a thoughtful way at the front end of this process to calibrate those benefits together and make sure we're being thoughtful and stewardly with those resources, not overdoing it. This is a bit of a drill because there are no Aspire approvals coming today. As soon as next month, we think there very well could be a film studio.
Possibly
next month. There could be a film studio approval under the Aspire program. This also does impact and is sort of a term and condition that the two votes we're about to do, the film studio and film lease partner folks should be aware of and notice on properly. So that's why we're doing this now. And then any future applicants to Aspire, obviously, get notice here as well.
So essentially, we're trying to prevent double count.
That's correct.
We don't want someone to be getting both the film tax credits and the Aspire awards without calibrating those two.
Correct. When we do an Aspire net benefit test or an Aspire performing, you're looking at the streams of income and expenses. And in theory, the film tax credit is a stream of income. And so we want to haircut that appropriately and make sure we're not double-counting. Our best foot forward on the rest of this. You guys have been wrestling with this for probably since this bill passed because we knew this day would come. And so we've been trying to be thoughtful about it. George, Hansi, Paul, Matt, lots of others have been. Gabriel, Chris, been really great to take this role.
George, I think I heard you mention that do we have a consultant look at each project?
So for regular Aspire projects, we use JLL oftentimes, especially when it's part of a unique type project. We also have a film consultant on staff, and we'll be touching base with them to ensure that the more film-specific aspects of the applications make sense.
And each of the applicants comes up with their own recommendation. They have their own consultant. And they work with me, and we go back and forth on the negotiations and how exactly the calculation fits in the spirit of the project that we're thinking of. Yeah.
For anyone who's not spending all their time with economic models, IMPLAN is one of the sort of industry standard. There's Coke and Pepsi, there's IMPLAN, there's many. IMPLAN is what we chose to use. See, it was very helpful in helping us make that decision many years ago. Several years ago.
One of the perks with IMPLAN, right, is that the inputs are employment. So, but a lot of the film production facilities are looking at production spend, so we're kind of having to back into that through estimates.
There's a third-party model that is not our, that's not a black box behind the curtain kind of model that's planned, the third-party subscription model.
Any other questions, comments? I know when we discuss this in committee, it is complicated.
Yeah.
Okay, hearing none. So the what we're being asked to do is approve the amendment to the net benefit test, correct? All right, so could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion.
Thank you. Second?
I hear second amendment.
Second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Noted. Gabriel?
Yes.
Okay. The motion is approved. Next, we have two specific film and digital media tax credits to approve, and Matt is back.
The first is the studio partner designation for Netflix, Inc. The members are asked today to award Netflix, Inc. with a studio partner designation and an initial 6-month extension for Netflix to provide EDA evidence to PCOs for the production facility described today in the memo. Overall, to be eligible for a studio partner designation, again, the applicant needs to be a film studio who commits to occupy at least 250,000 square feet for a period of 10 years. They also have to be able to provide a TCO for the facility within 36 months of approval. Netflix is redeveloping 292 acres at Fort Monmouth. I don't know if you guys have heard of that yet. The plan is 1.1 million square feet studio campus. For this particular parcel, for the studio partner designation, it is the McAfee parcel, where they have identified 281,000 square feet, which will include four sound stages totaling over 118,000 square feet and over 100,000 square feet of office and support space. This portion includes the reuse of existing structures on Fort Monmouth, including the existing Premier offices, which is that tiny yellow box in the bottom corner down there, as well as the McAfee building, which is the larger yellow box there, which they will use for office and support space, and then the sound stages are in pink there, one double and then two standalone sound stages. The parcel is anticipated to be operational by the end of December 2027. Overall, the full parcel development is expected to be completed in the first quarter of 2028, which includes a total of 12 sound stages for 309,000 square feet and has expected total project costs of just over $940 million. Demolition is expected to begin as early as this summer, potentially. I want to remind the board that the studio partner designation is not an award of tax credits. However, the designation would allow future film projects submitted by Netflix access to the studio partner allocation that we talked about earlier today, and all those excess benefits. Any construction contracts entered into by Netflix after receiving a studio partner designation would be subject to prevailing wage and affirmative action requirements. It is the staff's recommendation to approve Netflix for this designation, leaving only one studio partner designation available, as well as approving the initial 6-month extension for the documents. Happy to answer any questions.
Just to be clear again for the board, we're approving this designation, but you will come back to us with any specific tax credit approvals based on the facts and circumstances at the time.
Yeah, when they come back for actual projects, I believe all studio partners are coming to the board, or are we going to still follow the delegation?
Yeah.
Anything over $10 million in award size will come to the board as usual. If it's below that, it's approved under delegated authority.
Is this literally at the entrance to the fort?
A little bit further in.
Behind. We were just out there in the chart. We were there 3 weeks ago. Had a great meeting at Netflix with Netflix, and they are full speed ahead. And eager for you to take this vote so they can start moving to dirt.
Great. Questions, comments in the room? Anyone on the phone? Okay. Could I hear a motion to approve? Thank you.
Hold on just a second.
Thank you. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Recusals?
Robert Chimko.
Recused.
And Robert, if you could state your reason for the record.
We're doing business with Netflix.
Thank you.
Good. And you got your as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Motion passes.
Here.
Matt, on Togus Urban Renewal.
So Togus Urban Renewal, LLC, this is the branded 1888 Studios plans for Bayonne. The members are requested to approve Togus Urban Renewal, LLC, for this development in Bayonne and designated as a film lease partner facility designation. Film lease partner facility designations are available to studio operators and developers who commit to building at least 250,000 square feet for a period of 5 consecutive years, and who can provide a TCO for the space within 36 months of authority approval. Additionally, the applicant must agree to accept EDA equity into the project at the authority's discretion. The equity agreement does not need to be in place at the time of designation approval, but would need to be executed before the facility is fully operational. Togus Urban Renewal LLC, led by Chairman Arpad Busson, is developing 1.1 million square feet in Bayonne. The project includes construction of 23 sound stages totaling over 500,000 square feet. It's going to be the majority of the buildings in that middle graphic. Total project costs are estimated to be $1.2 billion. The facility is expected to be operational by the end of 2026. If the facility designation is approved today, all future construction contracts entered into by Togus would be subject to prevailing wage and affirmative action requirements. Similar to the studio partner, I would remind the board that the facility designation is not an award of tax credits. The designation would allow future tenants of the designated facility to film projects at that location to have access to increased benefits under the film tax credit program. These projects would have to meet the specific requirements to be eligible as film lease production companies that we talked about earlier to receive these excess benefits. It is staff's recommendation for the members to approve Togus Urban Renewal's development for a film lease partner facility designation. This would leave us with two designations available as this is the first. Happy to answer any questions.
So again, similar to the prior one, we're approving the designation, but any tax credit would come back to us.
And to Matt's point on the equity point, just one great note there. So in the bill that expanded the film lease partner program last summer, governor and legislature included an appropriation of the EDA to potentially make equity investments in the film lease partner projects. There was some, I think, confusion about that in the public discourse that was an additional subsidy. That's in fact the participation by the state potentially in the upside of these projects. So if we end up, when we crawl through the numbers, end up liking what they're doing here or the other two, we have an opportunity to essentially pari passu at the same term that any other equity investors are, have a piece of the studio. Taxpayers are investing a lot here, and there's rationale for the state participating in the economic upside, or excuse me, the financial upside, not just the economic and industry upside as well. To be determined if we end up thinking that's a smart idea or not. We have a year that clock starts in about 45 seconds, and then we have a year to evaluate that and make that determination. And then we have a few $10 million investment. No forecast whether we will or will not make that registration.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone? Questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Chimkin.
Thank you, Robert. Second?
Fred Juma.
Thank you, Fred. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, motion passes. Thank you.
You're scoring at home. It's a little more than $2 billion of potential film studio investment.
It's a lot of Jersey, so. A lot of stages.
Yeah. We're going to need a lot of extras. If you're looking for
the way to be supported. Play the role of chairman.
Exactly.
Next, we have the Brownfields Redevelopment Incentives presentation. Elizabeth?
Thank you. So this memo before you is, again, the first project being considered by the board under the Brownfield Redevelopment Incentive Program. The applicant for this first project is 99 Main Avenue, LLC, and the project is conveniently located at 99 Main Ave in Elmwood Park, New Jersey. Under this program, projects are eligible to receive either 50 or 60% of remediation costs up to a cap of either $4 million or $8 million, and it's dependent on the project location. This project is eligible for 50%, and the request is below that capped amount. This is a competitive program, and for this round, which is round one, applications were accepted from June 21st through September 21st of 2023. Staff has reviewed the application and deemed it eligible. The application was also evaluated by a scoring committee of authority staff and passed the minimum score. Additionally, NJCEP has confirmed the remediation costs are reasonable and appropriate, and that the developer is not responsible or liable for the cleanup or discharge. The site was historically used for electronics and other manufacturing, and that dates all the way back to 1955. And as a result, there have been several areas of concern that were identified, and those include things like historic operations, possible underground storage tanks, drums, historic fill, and groundwater contamination. This project includes additional investigation and remediating to a restricted use, which is typically a cap and a deed notice. So So the specific activities are listed on this slide, and they include things like a sensitive receptor evaluation and public notification of the environmental work, delineation of the soil, vapor intrusion, investigation and mitigation, monitoring well installation, groundwater sampling, groundwater remediation, soil excavation and disposal, as well as the CAP and deed notice. Just as a point of interest for the board, once the project and remediation is complete, the applicant has indicated that they plan to use the site for a construction business, which would include office building and lay down yard for the construction equipment. However, please note that that was that's post-remediation construction and it's outside the scope of this project and was not considered as part of the scoring for this application. As far as the project ownership, 99 Main Ave LLC is a single-purpose entity which was formed to remediate and redevelop the site, and it's owned by Pasquale Maziano, 50%, and Rosemary Maziano, 50%, and they are the managing members. The applicant owns the DEP lien and the municipal tax sale certificate for the site, and they are proceeding through the foreclosure process to acquire the site. It is expected that they will complete the foreclosure action and that the title will transfer and vest to 99 Main. Regarding the team, the applicant has assembled a core project team with experience in projects encompassing site development, infrastructure enhancement, and the revitalization of underutilized properties. They also have a well-established history of collaborating with environmental consultants and contractors on various projects. The LSRP, or Licensed Site Remediation Professional, for this development is Eric Schlock, who is a senior managing principal at Peak Environmental. He is experienced in conducting and overseeing environmental assessments, investigations, and remediations, including the redevelopment of a former oil terminal into a retail lumber yard here in New Jersey. For the project financing, the memo does include information related to it, this, including a table which shows the sources and uses. The total project costs are $1,304,472, and that does include the satisfied DEP lien of $150,000, as well as the satisfied tax lien of $275,000, also includes legal fees and environmental costs. The total eligible costs are $700,373. The applicant will be funding $385,205 of the remediation costs, which equates to 29.5% of the project, thus meeting the program's requirement of a minimum of 20% equity. Sources include funding from Pasquale and Rosemary Maziano, and $315,168 in tax credit sale proceeds. Up until the tax credits are sold, interim funding will be provided by Mr. and Mrs. Maziano. Staff also reviewed the application to determine if there's a shortfall in project financing gap. The calculated IRR with the benefit of the tax credit is still below the JLL hurdle rate, thereby satisfying the project financing gap test. Therefore, staff is recommending approval of this Brownfield Redevelopment Incentive Award of up to 50% of the remediation costs, not to exceed $700,373, with the tax credit award not to exceed $350,186.50. I'd like to thank you and take any questions.
Well, I just know this is the first of what we hope are many approvals under the Brownfield Redevelopment Incentive Program. So they got approximately zero attention in the discussion about the future of incentives and the discussion about programs we ought to add. This is a really exciting and important one. Hopefully we'll see lots more. One of the important things about this Brownfields program, lots of Brownfields programs across the country just deal with the soil and what's in the land, and that's really important. This also does hazardous building materials abatement and also full soup to nuts alleviation of environmental problems. Not in play here, this is just soil stuff, but generally speaking, this is a really comprehensive and good program that we're hopefully will have lots more approvals for in the future. Unfortunately, I have lots of
breath. I was going to say, I remember we discussed this in committee. This is a $150 million program allocated.
Yep. Minus $350 now.
My memory is right that the part of the provision, though, is someone not only remediates the site, they have to build on the site. Is that they have to use the site?
They do not under this program. This is more of a pre-development program, so we're teeing it up so that, that is the intention, is that we'll tee it up so that it is ready to be transformed into the next great thing for that community.
We think as a practical matter, most wills, it's only those 50% of the cost, if you spend the money.
You have to invest.
You have to invest. Spending money just to clean up the site for the virtue of cleaning up the site is something the government does all the time, but not necessarily as developers do.
Yes. Any questions? Comments? Anyone on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Second motion.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
I should also just note, not just for making the motion, Elizabeth, but Elizabeth and the Commissioner and everyone at DEP has been a great partner in this practice program. Many years it has been to get to the first approval. Thank you. We're really excited about it.
All right, the next item we have is an appeal of an award. On today's agenda, there is an item that relates to the hearing officer's recommendation regarding an application declination and the applicant's appeal abstain. The board is familiar with this. We've discussed this before. The board serves as the final decision maker. If the applicant is dissatisfied with the board's final administrative decision, it may appeal to the appellate division of the Superior Court of New Jersey pursuant to the rules of the court. And with that, I'll turn it over to Monica.
Good morning. As you may recall, the hearing officer's recommendation to uphold Thinkster's declination was presented at the December board meeting. The appellant CEO addressed the board prior to the vote, argued that Thinkster's repayments have been timely and consistent, and that they had maintained a direct debit arrangement with EDA for years, and suggested that the withdrawal amounts initiated by EDA were less than the amounts required in the agreement, and that it was EDA's decision to adjust the payments. So following a series of questions by board members and a suggestion to investigate the matter further, the appeal decision was tabled. Since then, we've reviewed the loan servicing, any relevant modifications and approvals, just to get a sense of what occurred and whether appellant's concerns about the direct debiting were valid. I'm going to speak a little bit about what we found and give some color to the loan servicing, and then hearing officer Marcus Salduti will just again state his recommendation for the board in brief. So the board approved the Edison loan for Thinkster in March of 2016, and they were approved for a payment moratorium through December 2017. In 2018, the loan was restructured to require scheduled interest-only payments that were direct debited, and also an annual lump sum payment that was based on financial information that Thinkster was to provide each year. The first lump sum payment was due in July of 2018, and Thinkster requested to pay that lump sum over the course of 3 months. They set up similar modifications for the lump sum payments that were due in 2019, 2020, and 2021, therefore increasing the direct debit payment amount accordingly to spread out that lump sum payment, in addition to their regularly scheduled interest-only payments for that relevant period of time. They didn't request a similar modification for the July 2022 lump sum payment. In fact, they didn't provide the 2021 financial information required to allow EDA to determine that payment itself event of default under the Edison loan agreement. Therefore, as the CEO had mentioned in his comments, the direct debit amount was lowered in July of 2022 back to interest-only payments, but that's because there wasn't a modification agreement for that lump sum made. In April 2023, prior to submitting their NOL application, they reached out to EDA to seek an additional modification and extension because they stated they couldn't pay off the loan and they couldn't pay back the lump sum that was due from 2022. Based on the representations of their financial situation, EDA could not provide that extension. So in sum, the Thinkster should have made a lump sum principal payment, which would have been equal to 6% of their 2021 revenues due July 1st, 2022, which wasn't paid, and any remaining balance, principal balance on July 1st, 2023, which was also not paid. In addition, EDA never received the audited financials required to determine that 2022 lump sum payment, and Thinkster never reached out to EDA to request a modification, which would have allowed them to split that lump sum payment into installments. Thinkster knew it was in default at the time of the application to the NOL program and had been in default since at least July 1st, 2022. The hearing officer's recommendation has not changed after this review, and I'll have him speak as to the recommendation.
Good morning, everyone. My recommendation hasn't changed since December. As a recap, the denial was based on several grounds. Number one, the default on the previous Edison Innovation Loan violates NJSA 5218-52, which explicitly prohibits applicants who who have defaulted on loans receiving state assistance. In addition, there's a cross-default provision in the Edison loan agreement. Default on one is an automatic default on the other. Insufficient documentation to meet the eligibility requirements of the program, and an incorrect certification by Thinkster's CEO regarding the loan default. Thinkster contested these grounds, claiming they were unaware of the default as they had not received notice of such, and maintained that the CEO certification about the loan default status was made in good faith. The company failed to make full payments on its loan, including a $240,000 payment due in 2022 and an approximately $600,000 balloon payment that was due in July of 2023. Thinkster argued that they were not aware of the default status, insisting that no formal notification of default was ever received from the lender. This lack of communication, they argued, led to the CEO incorrectly certifying the company had not defaulted on any state loans. However, under the terms of the loan agreement, failure to timely make payments constitutes a default, regardless of whether the lender formally notifies the borrower of such. In addition, Thinkster informed EDA that it would not be able to make the July 2023 balloon payment during conversations 2 months prior to the due date. In the final analysis, the hearing officer finds Thinkster Learnings arguments insufficient to overturn the denial decision. The officer underscores that the company cannot plead ignorance of its financial obligations or the impending balloon payment. Furthermore, Thinkster is statutorily barred from receiving state assistance due to the loan default.
Any comments, questions?
Not part of the formal appeal record, but the company we believe is in good standing. The application for this program, this annual appeal, annual cycle is open right now. Sometimes I feel like we have to be bureaucratic and Byzantine. That's what the law says we have to do sometimes in those circumstances if we find ourselves here.
Okay, any comments, questions? So what we are being asked to do is to approve the hearing officer's recommendation upholding the determination that we are denying Thinkster Learning's application. Can I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
Thank you. Second?
Antoine Johnson.
Thank you, Jewel. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the recommendation is approved. We will now turn to the Real Estate Committee. Charles, do you want to give a quick update?
Yes, thank you, Chair, and my apologies for not being able to be in attendance today. The NJEDA Real Estate Committee did meet on April 26th, and we had a robust agenda. We considered several items. Staff presented two recommendations related to the project budget for the State Health and Agricultural Building demolition project to complete the work. The Real Estate Committee also was provided with a presentation on the MOU between the EDA, the Trenton Board of Education, and the NJSDA, the School Development Authority, for the authority's purchase of specific site for the construction of the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center that was discussed earlier. Lastly, staff presented two recommendations for the grant awards for the Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Program, which was also previously discussed, which will help support capital development and transform sites negatively impacted as a result of the pandemic in Atlantic City. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Charles. The first item, I think both are going to be done by Diana. The first item is the Health and Agriculture Buildings Demolition Project.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Staff requests that members approve transferring approximately $9.324 million from the NJEDA State Leased Revenue Bond Funds A Series bond account to the 2018 B Series bond account. And this will help us complete the health and agriculture demolition and temporary parking project. This increases the budget to $28.277 million. In June of 2023, due mainly to disposal and replacement of contaminated crushed recycled concrete, which we call RCA, the members approved reallocating $8.54 million from the A series bond to the B series bond fund. $4.03 million was for the demolition, and $4.51 million was put in reserve for future legal claims for the project. That increased the budget from $10.4 million to approximately $18.59 million. Right now, we are requesting an increase due to disposal of the RCA material at a facility that was much further away from the originally intended facility, and the materials, because materials were not accepted at the local facility, we had higher disposal costs as well as transportation costs. And then we also have to remove more RCA material than initially estimated by the environmental consultant, which is Montrose. We also want to create an allowance to address the contingency of removing all the RCA material if required, as well as any impacted soils below the RCA. The funds are also will be used for increased costs due to complete the temporary parking lot because of the passage of time and the replacement of repair of utilities that were damaged during the removal of the RCA material currently. The project budget will increase from approximately $18.95 million to approximately $28.27 million. Any unused funds will remain in the bond account and be used consistent with the current bond approval and bond documents. Are there any questions on this one?
About this before many times, right?
Yes, this is not a great one. So yeah, this is a cost overruns, contractor subcontractor challenges. I think we'll be back talking about litigation, potential litigation, where enforcement of our rights and all that as we go through the most part of the finish the job, get the contaminants and all that, we're in the middle of that contract, cap the parking lot, to the labor department, taxation department, places to park, and wrap this up. But this is about the last chapter.
Any comments, questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
I'll make the motion, Chair.
First part.
Second?
I'll second.
Thanks, Fred. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or recused? Extensions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. One more, right?
Okay, so this goes in conjunction with that. So the staff request members increase the environmental pools consulting services total funding amount submitted through the task order request process by approximately $7.773 million, totaling approximately $13.819 million for the environmental pools. These additional funds shall be used to increase the Montrose Environmental, which we call Montrose. They are our LSRP, licensed site remediation professional, for the health and agriculture demolition project. In December 2023, the members increased the environmental pool to approximately $6.1 million, which included increasing Montrose's contract up to $4.5 million. The $4.5 million of additional funds increase the Montrose contract to remove and test and dispose of the contaminated excess concrete aggregate. The current funding request will be used to complete the removal of the placed RCA and finish the temporary parking lot. The additional costs include ours, exactly as the last one, to dispose of the RCA material at a facility that is further away with higher disposal costs because the material was not accepted at the local facility, to remove more RCA than initially estimated, and to create an allowance to address the contingency of removing all the RCA if required and any impacted soils below which the RCA rested. We recommend increasing the pool by $7.773 million to a total of $13.819 million, which will only be available to be used for the Montrose contract. The additional work will be performed by Montrose and will be paid from the additional 2018 State Government Building Bond Funds.
So, just to be clear, is it 13.8 in addition to the 27 million we already talked about, or is it a substantive?
Yeah, we will be using the funds from that.
So this is just what we just approved. This is where we're going to spend it.
This is how we're going to spend it.
And if we don't spend it, the project comes to a halt. And we got an ice store in track, right?
Yes, we have a licensed landfill in the center of China.
And these costs include projected cost allowances
to complete the job fully.
Yes, this is worst case scenario. So hopefully we don't need it. Seems to be the case with this project.
And Tim said this is not the last of this.
Ongoing. Many lawyers working on many options here.
We want to finish the project and then settle it afterwards.
Yeah.
And I make the motion to approve.
Thanks, Fred. Second? Thank you, Robert. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any proposals, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion is approved.
Thank you.
Tim, board memoranda.
This is our last voting item, so in the interest of time, I'll be brief here, but we have a number of board memos in your pack, including micro business loan program that continues to be a really important, powerful tool. We had a number of different approvals, some declined as well, but that's a program that's had nearly $100 million of support used in the micro business part of the economy, folks under $10 million or under $1.5 million in revenue. 90-something percent of Black, Latino-owned small businesses are some form of microbusiness. So we talked about the governor's equity goals around small business. Microbusinesses are central to that. The work that happens there. I also declined to all the excitement of having the First Lady here. I forgot to mention the board dashboard is also in here. It's packed. It's very exciting. You can see also the number of different program approvals that happen in between these meetings and the totality of things that we've been up to, nearly $700 million year-to-date through April across a number of different programs as well. So we are busy. Sometimes these meetings are somewhat of a relief because we're not working on other things for 2 minutes, and we're just working on 10 or 12 things at once, not 30 or 50 at once. You can see we're up to a lot, including 43 child care approvals, getting above $40 million of total approvals on our way to 115-ish with the money we have right now. So lots going on in lots of different directions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I first want to especially thank members of the board who attended in person today. I think this is our largest turnout. I might suggest the First Lady can come every board meeting. Thank you, First Lady, for attending and for your great comments, and best of luck with the center. And sincerely, thank you. I think it's great to have everybody here physically, and I know for those of you who couldn't attend to be on the phone, I thank everybody for their great work. This is volunteer service, and it's important because we're doing a lot of fun here. Any further discussions?
Point to raise, Chair. First, I want to congratulate you, firstly, getting this across the finish line. This is, I know, a true labor of love for her, so this is incredible. And I just want to give a shout-out also to Julie Krause in the Treasury's office. She's been involved because of our role in Governor Murphy's Executive Order 40, which was signed early in his administration and encouraged collaboration with the state, the city, and the county, because we are the largest landowner, largest employer in this capital city, so that we work together on state projects and help the city in its planning and its revitalization. And this is a great example of that. So kudos all around, but especially the First Lady. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Could I hear a motion to adjourn? Robert, I'll consider that a second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. That concludes our meeting today.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for your participation.